morning and welcome to Wanda Six, a Black Arts and Culture program, the African Sisters Media Network. Oh my goodness, this past weekend, March 11th and 12th, was a simply wonderful, wonderful occasion to get in touch with Orisha, Urban World Culture. That was Adema Majun's Wolf Off Jaguars issue exit. And I'm going to play an interview that I had with Louise Atish in preparation for the Urban World Festival, just so you can get a little taste of what you experienced or what you wish you had experienced. And before I share that particular interview, I am going to read something to you that I wrote about the Orisha Urban World Festival, because as I said, it was simply marvelous. It's really, really marvelous. I think I'm going to play Amakayla's Lovely Day, and then I'll read what I wrote and then play this interview. And I want people to send out love and light to our sister, Louise Atisha. She's recovering from her injury presently. It was so good. So here's Amakayla's Lovely Day, and enjoy. Thank you. Orisha Urban World Festival opens in Oakland, in Oaktown, USA, Friday, March 11th. It was raining all day, but last night, an evening blessed with new moon wonder, the cleared air breathed, inhaled a misty optimism peppered with spicy African folk. We were in an upper room. Remember Brother Rafiq Bilal Ashe. Oakstop was destination. Orisha Urban World Festival 2016. Adimu Majun, event host, introduced Awan Oshun Omnera, who opened the evening, evoking Achu Legba and all that is good and holy and wonderful as the ancestors parted earthly waters and danced and danced. The elder panel featured event after the invocation and welcoming ritual. Each elder was welcomed to the panel with applause and standing ovations. Some elders and other guests had flown into town from as far away as Washington, D.C., New Orleans, and Houston. I heard that these guests were pretty tired and a bit hungry, having just stepped off the airplane to drive to the venue. There was food, beverages, and complimentary libations for all of age. Facilitated by Baba Obafemi Origunwa, the panelists, Yeye Louise Atish, PhD, Iyabeji Kathy Royal, PhD, Iya Nedra T. Williams, Baba Kola Abimbola, PhD, and Baba Wade Nobles, PhD, shared personal stories about mentors and the presence of Ifa in their lives, stories of energy work, spirit call and response. It felt like we were home, sitting around the table after supper, listening to grown folk talk. The conversation was sweet, dessert forgotten, at least for a moment. It wasn't as if there weren't other luminaries in the audience. We are all royal. Most, if not all, seated at the table shared stories of friends and elders, family members who pointed a younger self toward a path best taken. Iyatis said that one always has a choice. Everyone on the panel could trace his or her spirit development to a relationship with an elder. Baba Wade's was a relationship which spanned multiple generations through a name, Wade. He spoke of being the incarnation or incantation of his great grandfather, Wade, and how his friend, an Ifa priest, told him he needed to get initiated to accomplish the work he was sent here to complete. Dr. Nobles demystified the idea of Orisha by calling Orisha energy, Ashe, manifest in creation. So to say Yemen Jah or Yemen Yah was in the house last night means that her energy or Ashe was manifest through those daughters who were Sweetwater women. Iya Sula of Zion Trinity called out, "Make way for the mothers," as Iya Beji came to the center of the circle and began to dance. Immediately taken by the song, Yeye T stepped near her and said, "I've got you, baby." Spirit of Orisha, Yeye Tish was not the only one. We also saw a young girl child dancing with the elder woman, gesture for gesture, even anticipating others. The two, a grandpa de deux entree, introduction, and adagio with multiple variations, then a coda or conclusion. This form called Pisse de Resistance and Bravara is performed by leading or principal dancers and is a highlight of a ballet repertoire. Iya Beji's surrender last night shifted the energy so that Orisha could enter in all its majesty. The moment reminded me of another occasion when Zion Trinity minus one performed at the Mahava commemoration in New Orleans last year. We were in Congo Square in front of the altar. Libations had been poured, prayers recited, but the energy was a bit too contained. There was hesitation. People weren't being freed. So Sula started pouring libations and talking. And as she talked, the air changed. And when she finished, and she and Andanye, another member of Zion Trinity, started singing, the square, Congo Square, was filled with Africans unchained, literally unhooked. The Zion sisters got it like that. I can't imagine this evening. I can't imagine this evening when they perform for the first time. I can't imagine tomorrow evening, I believe is what I meant, when they perform for the first time with a live band. Later when I asked Iyabeji if she remembered the possession, she said no. She could recall thinking how at home she felt and then letting go when Yeye assured her she was protected. Iyabeji, or mother of twins, reflected earlier on the panel, Arisha is always present with her, and so she never walks alone. Mama C, who is visiting from Tanzania, opened the acoustic set. She played the East African lute, or Obakano, with accompanist Kayleighton Toto on congas. After her set, the three sisters, Sula, Spirit, Oshun Ede, Water, and Andaye, Fire, sang selections from Spirit of Orisha. Theirs was a classical and fitting conclusion to a wonderful evening. We mingled, circulated black dollars, laughed, and talked. Children slept standing up, too excited to sit for long, yet not used to being up with the grown folks. Others who passed out were held by dads and moms. The concert tonight, March 12th at 8 p.m. to 1 p.m. at the Uptown in Oakland, featuring Iyabobi Cespedes, is going to be awesome. And it was awesome. She was present last night, too. James Gale shared with her a painting he made of her likeness. When I left at 12 midnight, he was working on a painting of Miles Davis for the opening of the new film next month in Los Angeles. I knew it was Miles from the eyes, which was all that is finished at this point. Name that tune? No. Name the iridescence or soul mapping our eyes represent. So that's just a little, and that's on my blog, Interchange, which is wandasabir.blogspot.com. So I'm going to play another piece from Awan Ortiz. It's called Joyful Noise. And it's from his latest CD. Thank you.
Fletcher's grandness, the heir to his big bandness, was a master arrived to forever lay out the blue wonderfulness of the orchestra, Duke Ellington, whose greatness transcends all trends. Duke told Max, don't let them call your music jazz, because they can make anything that. What prophecy, cold and true? Why, they can say what your boy, what's his name, Elevated G is playing. Is that you did? But then, what's his name was the king of jazz? And what's the other dude was the king of swing? And we now up to in that alley, banging on them tin pans. They called it swing, but they meant a noun, not a verb. Never could get the verb in it. Remember all them ladies and men, masters and mistresses of the verbal thing? Ethel Waters in her blue, new American classical popular song, and Billy, who reached the deepest tear in our heart, and Ella, all flying off them wonderful bands who carried our hearts, our meaning in their songs. The royalty like Duke and the Count of Basie, the lady who made her alliance with the real American president, Mr. Young, and you know they swung. Bean, the mighty hawk, taught us all how Lewis sounded on another horn. And the cats in their band, Duke's people at the top of the steeple, Johnny Hodges, Harry Carney, Cootie Williams, Cat Anderson, Paul Gonzales, Ben Webster, and other greats who morphed into another age. If the 20s was the jazz age, then the 30s, the Great Depression, people seemed like they got skinny. But the age of swing, from all those songs, the world was looking for love, but it seemed like there wasn't any. Goose-stepping in Europe, Paine in Spain. They was painting mustaches on the Mona Lisa and putting a commode in the museum. Had civilization stopped? My man Helene said they couldn't stop bebop, and they won't stop hip-hop. Bird Blue, Dizzy New, Max carried our original earth to this place where we grew. Bud smiled, then here come Miles. There was a B and a bop. It's just another beat, another B and another app. Where the is and the un-is cohabit the same frame. But the sound was a verb, not a noun, unless you could in Congo style really get down our share shake. But then the could did, and then them original hipsters appeared with the Vance and the Bowdy O'Rooney. Said you gotta have them black notes, actually they is blue. I want my fist flatted. And you gotta have the drum where we and the music come from. Dig, that word was the first I heard. It all came beyond paper. For the proper syncopation, you gotta have improvisation. We gonna take them tired chords and make our own songs, our own stories. Otherwise, it's too dull. It don't swing. It ain't hip. We said we wanted wild, crazy, frantic. We wanted it to be exactly like us. Gone from the square world or out to lunch. My man Symphony Sid from the jazz corner of the world. It sounded like there was never anything before as hip as Birdland and this lullaby where I first heard the divine one. Sassy say, you're not that kind before. You're not the kind of a boy. You're not the kind of a boy for a girl like me. What? And we heard of Fats Navarro and Fat Girl and Kenny Clark and Klug and Long Tall Dexter Gordon and Stan Getz and Zoot Sims. We heard the hippest people in the world. But remember, when you go out, somebody's going to try to bring you back in. Bop was too hot, the Annie Bop Squad say. Too fast, too crazy. Crazy, we said. The counterattack was to bring it back. We all been out to lunch too long, whether it was swing or bebop, Disney dream. If you wanted a cop, you had to hit the street. No road out of the jungle, that's 52nd Street, where the Charleston hit the New York docks. 12th Avenue was a shock. From Angola to the gullahs in South Carolina, got the first thing smoke, went up to New York. Charleston, James P. wrote. Greet those who landed in the devil's northern house. Hell's Kitchen, to be exact. San Juan Hill, Monk and Benny Carter's home, where Lincoln Center sits still. That's right. He on the only money that ain't white. But what we was trying to say, when it got too hot, some folks tipped away from that street. I think it was the heat. Last seen heading west, they next address. It was cool, really cool. Some said, calm down. Miles said, get down. Stan heard, Clue, Budo, Jerry heard, Lee heard, John Lewis heard, Gil Evans heard, Poncho Haygood heard. They gave birth to the school, the real birth of the cool. When the memory of the hip start to slip, the gorgeous blue, the funk we knew, they're gonna bend their knees and raise it back from the mood indigo that flows out of the black. What was bad could be bad, much, much better than that. Thus spoke Nat. So when cool started to fool with my man JoJo's soul, he went out and put the church in. Where them Negroes' eyes be rolling back in their head and start speaking some stuff ain't never been said. A dude named Buhena played them drums like he was insane or from the blue continent of dark under your heartbeat. Dudes named Horace drug the funky gospel into the joints, hollering, let me see what you do with this shovel. And the Holy Ghost popping his tambourine, chick-a-ching, razzle in the room. That's nasty when you bring Africa and the Lord in like that. He wanted the messengers from the Holy Ghost Mau Mau Baptist Church, and they got a message from Kenyon 125th Street. the University of Blakey, the Academy of, well, it might have seemed like that, but it really was this, where you could dig Hank Mobley and listen nobly to the man who called the uncrowned king, Kenny Dorham, but always so many others came to fill up the space with names of that school, Clifford Brown, Lou Donaldson, Chrissy Heath, Donald Byrd, Jack McLean, Lee Morgan, Benny Golson, all the way to Billy Harper and Wynton Marsalis. What all that was is the saving of the deep historical vaunts, the blues, the ancient call and response from across the trees and through the woods, so you know where I am and I wait for your response. Our blue life memory all the way back across the world. The zigzag of chance, the improv, and fix however to the mighty drum, the rhythm of life. What has no beat cannot stay. What was called hard bop was something to wake us up again to the rhythm of ourselves. Max and Brownie, along with Bruhena, helped bring the fire back. The post-cool smoke fanned from the wings of the great bird, but now the heavy motion would be by train. We call that band of Miles the Hydrogen Bomb and Switchblade Band. Paul and Red, Cannonball, the Funkus, Mad Philly Joe and Train, the monster with the horn. Actually, Miles' great band was but a preface to another awesome being, Train's Coy Tyner, Jimmy Garrison, Elvin Jones. But Train had to pass through the sphere of Thelonious to get deep into the mysterioso of the funk, leaving the world of the merely hip for the monkishly profound. Monk and Train at the five spot opens a new world of other than where you've been. Let me tell you, I was there. Train didn't even know the arrangements. He sounded like a stranger. But in a minute, Train was in it, and the whole building moved and pulled away. Little Rudy Tootie jackying in Monk's moves. So around midnight, the new music came. We never was the same. By the time they got from the Bowery to Carnegie Hall, must have been time for something next stop new. Even a Pharaoh, an Ornette, an Albert, a Sun Ra fell by. They heard Train's cry. Monk's blew inside. A new world welcomed those with ears to hear.
That was Baba Amiri Baraka in performing that particular poem in Billy Harper's Knowledge of Self. And before that, you heard Smooth Sailing, Bill Doggett's Smooth Sailing. And this is the centennial year for Bill Doggett. And we had a wonderful conversation with his nephew, Bill Doggett, who's here in the San Francisco Bay Area last Friday. So if you want to listen to that, it's in the archives. And scatting was Ella Fitzgerald on Smooth Sailing. And so I've been teasing you so much that you're going to be hearing from Yay Yay Louisa Teach. Well, actually, you are. Right now, let me share a little bit from her bio, which is on the website for Orisha Urban World Festival. And this is just the first Orisha Urban World Fest. There's going to be another one next year. And so get your tickets for New Orleans. That's probably where it's going to happen. So Louisa Teach is a writer, ritual theater director, producer, and mixed media artist. She is the author of several books on African and African-American spiritual culture. They include Jambalaya, the Natural Woman's Book of Personal Charms and Practical Rituals, A Woman's Spirituality Classic, and it's available in German and Spanish. Another book is Carnival of the Spirit, Seasonal Celebrations and Rites of Passage. Another book is Jump Up, Good Times Throughout the Seasons with Celebrations from Around the World. And we talk more about some of her other accolades. She's an initiated elder in the Ifa Orisha tradition of the West African diaspora, and she holds a chieftaincy title. That's why we call her Yeye, Yeye Woro, from the Fantomisi compound in Ile Ife, Nigeria. And presently, she is the chair of the World Orisha Congress Committee on Women's Issues. So we're going to just play this interview, which is just really wonderful. And, maybe if we have a little time afterwards, maybe I'll play a little bit more music. Enjoy.
So earlier today, I had this long sort of opening preamble. And And so I asked the question, what happens when black deities relocate from the village to the city or cross oceans? How does Ifa equip his spiritual inheritors to navigate or battle resident demons? And how does Ifa sustain the souls of black folk? And I know with your work, what I really love about your work is the practical applications of it, that one does not have to be initiated. One doesn't even have to know a whole lot. One just pick up your book, particularly Jambalaya. It's like a resource book, and you could just look at the table of contents and find what you need to do to heal yourself and your situation and just do it. And, yeah, and it's so poetic and so beautiful the way that you sort of make African spirituality accessible to a people that are hungry but not necessarily knowing what to eat.
Yes. Yeah, that, you know, it's very important that the truth of African spirituality be laid out plain without a lot of exoticism or romanticism, and especially not, you know, right now with the internet, there is so much false information out there that it is, it's frightening, okay? It's frightening. And it's really, really important that people who practice the tradition write and teach and spread the word and show people that these, you know, Ifa is based on immutable universal laws that have been interpreted through the consciousness of the African diaspora. Anything that is present in any other tradition is present within Ifa in a particular way that is clearer, that is more reverent and more joyful than other things that I have encountered. Highly practical, definitely communal, and designed to, you know, get you through your daily life. That's what's important to know about this. There's a lot of, I have to say, there's a lot of highbrow and low life stuff that is out there about African spirituality, and so it's our job to make it intelligible for those who are looking for intelligent explanations.
I was just, you know, sort of looking at, you know, sort of your short yet quite comprehensive bio on the website for the Orisha Urban World Festival, and what, when you think about that, because, you know, you've actually organized you know, such, you know, world festivals around you know, Orisha, and this is an urban, and, you know, urban is a code word.
Yeah.
So black folks, you know, hip hop generation, you know, the folks that are on the outside of the city looking over at a sphere that they are not welcome in. So I was wondering sort of what would be your hopes for, you know, for such a gathering this coming month?
You mean the Orisha Urban Festival?
Yes, exactly. Like who?
Well, there's no doubt in my mind that is going to be an exceptionally rich atmosphere with amazing, you know, the faculty, the staff, the cast is amazing. And so my hope would be that people who are interested in Orisha tradition, who would like to see something authentic and contemporary, would attend this event so that they can feel the energy of Orisha at work, even in this urban setting. You know, I'm amazed that that group has been able to take the genre of hip hop, which, you know, is threatened by some people who take the real low road, and they have elevated it to the place where African-derived music belongs, in that crossroads of the spiritual and the guidance of daily life. So I am really, really impressed with Wolf Hawk Jaguar, and I'd like to see more of our young people experiencing that, you know, rather than some of this other bullshit that they are always always exposed to. As I continue to support the furthering of the understanding of Orisha in urban context, at the same time, I have to say that I do feel it is important for us to reclaim land, Our tradition evolved in the context of a primal forest, and everything that we do is an attempt to reconstruct the power, the beauty, and the atmosphere of the forest in an urban setting. That's why, you know, palm leaves are important on our shrines. We play drums that make sound forever, for blocks. Our rituals involve fresh herbs that have to be grown somewhere and the raising of animals. And so when we do not have access to land, there are certain things that are missed out that ordinarily gives one the autonomy that one has with land. You know, like I just recently buried my 93-year-old mother, and I was blessed to be able to be with her until her last breath left. But for me, as people of African descent, we need to have a place to bury our dead our way without them being turned into chemical pus bags, without them being locked into a resellable metal container, without them having to go into a public cemetery, because it is our tradition, and people are trying to bring it back, it is our tradition to bury our people on our land and plant a tree and maintain a sacred grove, you know. And right now the laws need to be changed, because if I wanted to bury my mother in a bag of compost and plant a tree on top of her in my yard, I would not be able to do that legally. I would not be able to do that. And so, you know, I do want us, while we are promoting Orisha in urban setting, I do want us to keep our minds on the importance of having land, of having village, of being able to grow our own, of being able to play drums all night if we want to without any neighbors calling the police, to have clean crops to eat, to let our animals run free. You know, you can't do that in the city. And in the city, trying to just practice your tradition encounters a lot of problems from people who don't understand or who have bought into some other notion about who we are and what's natural and what we ought to be doing. So anybody who is able to reproduce the atmosphere of village in the middle of concrete is in fact performing a magical act, and that's what this festival will do. They are bringing what they received in the villages in Africa and laying it out on the concrete of Oakland.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when you mention that, I think about Tupac Amaru Shakur and one of his poems, and also his collection has the same title, A Rose That Grew From Concrete. And you know, it's just amazing how, you know, people of African descent have been able to find a way to sustain life in mm-hmm. such really dire and devoid of any type of spirit, you know, situations. I mean, you think about being enslaved, you know, wow, I mean, dehumanized, you know, made into a commodity, yet mm-hmm. people of African descent, we maintained our gods, you know, our Orisha, they live with us, you know. Iyanedra said, yeah, we carried them around in our pockets, you know,
right.
we put them in our hair, you know, we tied them around our ankles, you know, and then they lived in the movement, they lived in the song, they lived, you know, in the way we breathe and move and bury our dead, even, you know, under the, you know, the ring shout, you know, all these things.
Right.
And yeah, and then I was just thinking about, you know, you're just like a diaspora spiritual woman. I mean, I mean, like, you know, sort of like being initiated elder Iyanifa in the Ifa Orisha tradition of the West African diaspora. And mm-hmm. you hold the chieftaincy title, Yeye Woro, and then from the Fatu, is it Mise compound of Ila Ife, Nigeria?
The Fatu Mise compound, right.
Yes, exactly. And then, you know, now you are the chair of the World Orisha Congress Committee on Women's Issues. However, you're also a devotee of Dambala Wedo.
Yeah,
the Haitian rainbow serpent.
Here's the thing, Wanda, just so everybody's really clear,
yes.
People get mad at me because of the vanity that I'm about to display here, so get ready.
Okay.
You know, me, African woman, I am very clear that every human thing on this planet crawled from between my black legs, okay? I am the mother of humanity. I'm clear about that. I need every African woman, I need everybody to get that, okay? As African people, no matter how much anybody tries, there will never be a complete annihilation of us physically, mentally, spiritually, or emotionally, because we are the seed of humanity. Everybody needs to get that. Okay, now, my particular vanity, as an African-American woman, I am clear that no matter how broke I might be or how lacking in funds I might be at the moment, when I look at myself in comparison to most of the women in the third world, a most indigenous women, I realize that I belong to a leisure class of women who are well educated, who right now, even though I'm in New Orleans and it's getting real close to the situation in Flint, but I can get clean water, okay? Basic things, I can get food. For me, the very fact that the ancestors have seen fit to allow me to be that privileged, okay, gives me the responsibility to preserve as much of what I have inherited as possible. Therefore, you know, yes, I study everything Yoruba. Yes, I study everything Egyptian. I study everything Haitian. Anything that is born from Africa, my mother Africa, I feel like I have not only a right but a responsibility to preserve that, to heal that, to improve upon that, to make that available to those who are humble enough to be respectful and who can really need it and want it. So, you know, right now I'm putting out an appeal to to my sisters in the Akan tradition, the traditions of Ghana. Come teach me. Teach me something. I realize I don't know enough about that tradition, but I need to turn my attention in that direction because word is coming to me that Ghana is a place where we as African Americans are warmly received, that the people there want us, much like, you know, that coast is the coast where people built homes for us to come back to during the Garvey movement. If the ancestors are seeing fit to open that door for us again, I respectfully want to approach that, just as Nigeria has welcomed us and South Africa is welcoming us and, you know, people in Brazil are welcoming us. We need to reach across the water and establish kinship relationships as much as possible from our position of privilege, because that's what it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was wondering if you could talk about the portability of Ifa and how one doesn't have to be initiated to benefit from African spiritual practices. And actually, I wanted to ask you another question before that. I wanted to ask you, you're from an African city in America, in the United States. I mean, the most African place. So it's almost like you know, those from New Orleans never really, I mean,
yeah, we've been in village.
Yeah.
You know, people, you have to understand that I am reacclimating to modern-day New Orleans. The New Orleans that I grew up in was not culturally a part of the United States, actually. We were more like a sister city of the Caribbean than anything. I mean, you know, New Orleans was so different from Boston that it ain't even funny. New Orleans was much more like Port-au-Prince or Havana or, you know, any of those places. And also because I am a child born in the late 40s, to some extent, you know, I am part of I grew up with mores and ways that were more part of an early part of the century when we were still holding on to what we had inherited before we were bombarded by television and internet and these nanosecond imaginary grasp of knowledge. I grew up listening to my elders tell stories and learning to decipher proverbs. So, you know, my head got conditioned in a different way than the child who was just sat in front of the TV and made to watch some foolishness. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It gave me a closer, I feel, relationship to both the land, the ancestors, and some of the old ways, you know. I was also blessed with a very unusual mother. She's not really that unusual, but not recognized and praised as much as she should have been, who's of Haitian and Native American descent. That gives me a whole nother way of looking at the world. And so, yeah, you know, New Orleans has held on to a lot of its spiritual history. It's always been a seaport for spirituality and culture. And it's a place where, you know, people have a joyous attitude, and that is central. That's central to African spirituality. That is central. So, you know, I'm blessed. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm really blessed.
Right, yeah. And you're also a mother, and I know when you lived, you know, in the Bay Area, you would host, I think twice a year, these gatherings where we would mm-hmm. we would look at, you know, the sacred waters of the planet, and
right.
invoke, you know, Yemenja, and I was wondering if you could talk a bit about, you know, the institutions that you've been a part in establishing, like Ile Orunmile Oshun,
mm-hmm.
and what that means, and how, and sort of what Orisha is on your head, and what that means in
mm-hmm.
your life, and just sort of where you are right now on this path.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I'm initiated. I have 32, 33, I can't even keep track of them. I've got 30-odd years of Oshun made with 8 years of study before I was actually initiated. I'd been initiated in the Fahami Temple of Amun-Ra, which was a particular view on Egyptian spirituality. I have, what, this is 2016, so I have 15 years of E5 made, and, you know, I went through an initiation for the Green Tara. In honor of my mother's people, I've been awarded the position of Native American pipe carrier, you know, and like I said earlier, I have participated in and sought to be a positive representative of our spirituality here in the United States, in Central and South America, in Australia and New Zealand, in Europe, you know, everywhere that I have ever gone, it's been my assignment to represent us, and especially to represent black women as well as I possibly can. So, you know, with this birthday coming up, I'm going to be 68 years old. There has been many, many years of the Festival of the Bones, which is the one that I really love, where we do a ritual of remembrance for the ancestors of the world. All the traditions are represented. People from all walks of life come together to remember those who have contributed to our lives and passed on. Now, this I usually do it the second week of November, but I was here in New Orleans attending to my mother, who was in the process of crossing. I came here in August and held her hand until January. But as I sit here just a few minutes ago, you know, I am in communication with other members of my ELE, and we are talking about, you know, how we will be able to do another Festival of the Bones. And even more than that, I'm interested in traveling to different communities and teaching people in those areas how to do a Festival of the Bones in their own communities. So I'll be going to Atlanta and Nashville and Indiana and different places in the coming years to help people to know how to do that. Now, very, very importantly, and I'm talking globally now, I need everybody to be very, very clear that mainstream media and politics loves to put our attention on the so-called oil crisis. Y'all know that's a manipulated phenomena.
Mm-hmm.
I hope y'all know that, okay? But let us not be fooled about what the real crisis is, and that is the privatization of water. We can all get along without oil for 3 days. Try not having water and see what happens, okay? pay attention to the fact that people like George Bush and his cronies are buying up land with waterfalls. Pay attention to the fact that we have situations where water that that people should be able to get freely, like at Flint and here, is being poisoned while the price of bottled water is going up and becoming a gourmet thing, you know. Pay attention to the fact that Monsanto has made Frankenfood that is so radioactive that it can be seen from outer space, and pay attention to the polluting of land with waste. And be clear that if you control the land and you control the seed, and you control the water, you can kill millions of people without ever touching them. Those are tools of global genocide, okay? And there's a Yoruba proverb that says, the one who thinks he is the enemy of water will soon find himself in the soup. Our hope exists at two levels. The most important one is that water herself, I'm talking about Yemaya, Oshun, you know, Olosa, Oya as the river. I'm talking about all the water spirits of the world. Every indigenous people everywhere in the world have rituals to honor and placate the waters. We need to be doing that to let the waters know that we respect them and that we count on them. The other thing we've got to do is get the poison out and slap the hands of those who are poisoning the water. If we don't do that, we will find this planet littered with the bodies of the dead. And there are things at work. We just need to get governments and the people to acknowledge this. I was reading yesterday, somebody's working on a boat that will go in and suck plastic out of the ocean. My Ferifunia Maya. Okay. Somebody is working on, somebody has created a water filter where an individual person, it's a gigantic straw, can dip it into water that is filthy and suck up water that is clean, okay? As far as I'm concerned, it would be a tribute to Oshun to send truckloads of that kind of filter to villages in Africa and in India where people are dying from a lack of water. And it's important to know that as Orisha worshipers, our worship is not abstract. It's not abstract. It's not something you sit around and intellectualize about. It is something that you are inspired to do something about, okay? It is something that you are inspired to do something about. And probably the last thing I want to say in response to your question about where I'm at right now, you know, on April 20th, I am going to be 68 years old. And I've been in the trenches on the front lines of political concerns. It seems to me like since I was 9, okay? That's a lot of years. And also the experience of just having buried my great and ancient mother has the effect of making me realize, as it does for most people, that I have lived longer than I'm going to. I don't anticipate living to be 112. I don't. So that means that my time needs to be spent creating the legacy that I will leave behind me and enjoying what's left of my life. So I look forward to writing some of this stuff, some of this, these wonderful tributes to the ancestors that have been laying dormant in my computer. Y'all, I got 13 works in progress in here. You know that's a shame. I need to finish that stuff. You know, Wanda, remember when I used to come over to your house and talk about this project and that project? And
yes.
I'm chipping away. It's time to stop chipping and finish some of this stuff. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It's time to stop chipping and finishing some of this stuff. And in order to do that, you know, I have to shift my focus away from so many social things and concentrate, because, you know, I don't have the energy I used to have. My back, my head says run over here, and my back says, guess what, you better sit your ass down. So I'm listening to my body and hoping that the years of experience will cause me to be able to write something that will be of value in the coming generations. You know, that's where my focus is now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just thinking about, you know, our writing sessions, me, you, and Javelin. And, you know, Javelin just published her novel.
Oh, bless and good for her.
Yeah. It's on Amazon. It's not in paperback yet, but you can get it electronically.
Wow, what's the title?
I'm looking for it right now as we speak. So when I find it, I'll tell you.
Because
I bought it, but I think it'd be faster for me to just find what she sent me. But, it's one of her many stories, you know, now as a novel. I was, you know, thinking about, you know, the time when you and Javelin collaborated with Stephanie and Johnson at La Pena, and the voodoo, was it the voodoo priestess visited Miss Pat's house?
Yes, honey. That's right. That's right.
Right. Yeah. Really awesome.
Wow.
Yeah. And as you were speaking, I was thinking about the Festival of the Bones, and yeah, that was so wonderful. What I really loved about the Festival of the Bones was going to the cemetery and throwing the pennies, and there was something else we're supposed to put there. I don't know if it's ground something, you know, to get permission to cross over, and then cleaning the tombs of and the grave sites of people that, you know, maybe their ancestors, or maybe the people, everybody's dead in the family, or, you know, if they're babies, and which means their parents have probably made their transition, and, you know, just cleaning up the space, for these spirits. And that was just so lovely. I just really loved that. And it's really great that you're going to be going around sort of teaching people how, because people used to know how to do this, but teaching people how to take care of the dead. And
yeah.
I was wondering if you could talk about, because, you know, that's the thing I love talking about is ancestors. So,
yeah
could you talk about, you know, sort of within, you know, we talk about Orisha, and we have the human realm, and then we have ancestors. I was wondering if you could sort of put the ancestors in a context, and why is it important to revere and to remember our ancestors?
Well, because they are the human manifestation of spirit. Hmm. I mean, each one of us came from spirit, contained spirit, but the ancestors are our examples of how human beings have manifested spirit in the past. You know, again, folks are not taught to look deeply at how this works. Okay, all right, here we go. So, let us say, one of the important proverbs says, those who go before us make us what we are. This is very clear to me about my mother. Everything that I am grew from the seed that she planted. As a storyteller, I learned to tell stories from her. As a cook, I was her sous chef. As a community organizer, she was the block mother. You know, she set examples for me that I have taken and used it and evolved it and become the person that I am, okay? That is true of everybody individually and collectively. Those who go before us make us what we are. What we have, you know, people used to say, well, you know, you're not a nut that just fell off of a tree yesterday, right? But even if you think you are, that tree has roots. You know, those are the ancestors. We're sitting here talking on the phone, and that puts me in the mind of all the people whose intelligence contributed to the creation of this thing that we are now using. You know, when you look at it that way, you are grateful not only for your body, for your talents, for your predisposition, for the information that you have received, and for the history of every everyday thing that you use. Now, that's the physical side of ancestor reverence. The mystical side of it is that every thought, every feeling, every action that every human being has ever committed continues to exist as pockets of energy. Okay? And so we perform ritual in order to put ourselves in alignment with the surviving intelligence of the ancestors so that we can access it, so that we can manifest it, so that we can further it. Now, on a societal level, you know, I have to tell people all the time, they say, well, you know, y'all do that old African ancestor reverence thing. Guess what? Every time you go to a Shakespeare festival, you're doing a watered-down ancestor reverence ritual. Hmm. It's watered down. You're not calling it that clearly, but you are continuing the tradition that that man started. If it was some one person, you know, you are furthering the thoughts. You are increasing that energy. When we bring that home, then all of our music, the roots of all of our music came from our African ancestors. The way we cook our food, that came from our ancestors. My love of fabric, the way we dress, that came from our ancestors. You know, everything that we do now is some layer of the gift of the ancestors that we are now using. And so doing ancestor reverence is not only reverence for them, but it is a way of expressing self-esteem, esteem for oneself, you know. That falls into a bigger problem that we have in Western culture where we don't acknowledge that genius is common. That's another thing I'm on to these days, you know. If you go on to YouTube and you put in genius is common / Louis Satish, you will see that I have joined a project that's been started by a brother named Bruce George, and we are out to show on a daily basis how every person alive has ashe. Everybody has some sort of genius, and you're going to see a lot of it at the Orisha Urban Festival. But that's an idea that I really, really, really want people to get, because we have an educational system that is making our young people feel stupid. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, but
I can't sit still for that.
The book Javelin just published is called Everybody Gets Thirsty, ERR apostrophe, Everybody. It's a post-Civil War love story. And,
uh-huh.
Yeah, so people should go and support her, get her book.
Oh, wait a minute. Everybody.
Everybody. Everybody. ERR. Everybody. Everybody. Yeah. ERR apostrophe, body.
Uh-huh.
Everybody. Gets thirsty. And we're talking about water, right? So it's kind of,
yeah.
It fits in real well to the conversation.
Wow.
Everybody gets thirsty. And so that's a metaphor. Gets thirsty for water, but also gets thirsty for truth and gets thirsty for love. And, you know, so it's like that primal yearning everybody has.
Wow.
That's alive, right? I mean, you know, if you're dead, then you don't thirst for anything. But, yeah, so as long as you're thirsty, I guess that's good.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
It is good.
Mm-hmm.
It is good. We have to tune in. We have to access our inner genius, and we have to apply it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like the world is in dire straits. I often say that, you know, we're living in a war zone with an epidemic during a natural disaster.
Mm-hmm.
Think about that for a minute. We're in a war zone with an epidemic during a natural disaster. If people kept that in mind, it would change your daily behavior. It really would.
Mm-hmm.
It really would.
Yeah.
It would.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we have to think about that.
Yeah.
We have to respond to that.
Mhm. Yeah. Yeah, people just be still just for long enough to be able to collect themselves, cuz we're moving too much. We don't like being still, and you know, and unless we're unconscious, which is not a good like alternative, like be still and be conscious, as opposed
right.
to be still and be unconscious, which means you don't benefit from the being still part of it. Which means
wow.
you know, when you're being still, then that means you can go inside and just let you know these truths sort of settle, because you know from your work, which we spoke about earlier. What doesn't have to be initiated to tap into one's African sensibility and the truth, because it's a part of your pores, it's part of your skin, it's the way you breathe,
right.
you know, but, you know, people don't know this because they don't know themselves.
Right.
Yeah.
And they don't know that spirituality is an everyday thing. I mean, here's what I want to say really clearly for people about that.
Yes.
There is a difference between using, accessing Ifa and African spirituality. There's a difference between that and reading a couple of books and claiming that you are a priest.
Mm-hmm.
See, this is what worries me about the fact that there's so much stuff on the Internet these days is people don't know the line between accessing Orisha for their own growth or for the growth of their community and turning it into some kind of I don't know. You know, I've run into so much foolishness at different times that I'm even reluctant to take up your time speaking on it, because I can see that I got to go in 12 minutes. I've got another thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're talking about earth, air, fire, water, land, spirit, community, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It ain't no strange thing, okay? Get some guidance, learn some things, improve your life. If the priesthood is for you, and there are many different levels of it. If the priesthood is for you, believe me, your ancestors will let you know, and you'll be led on a path to it. I tell anybody that when I was young, I thought I was going to win an Oscar. Oshun said, I got your Oscar, okay? And so I find myself here very happily being her servant. I'm very happy as her servant, and I realize if I went for the Oscar, I'd have been cussing people out by now. But, you know, you have to think about that. You have to feel about that. I tell everybody, start with your ancestors, you know, start with your own ancestors. Then move to improving the quality of your own Ori, and then embrace Orisha and live your life. Your life will take you where you need to go.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean when you say embrace Ori?
Well, that's improving your own consciousness.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. We really, at another time, we can have a whole conversation about improving one's consciousness and living by right of consciousness. Mm-hmm. You know, that's we talk about human rights, we talk about civil rights, we talk about all kinds of things, but there is a thing by right of consciousness that we'll talk about at another time.
Okay, yeah. So in our final, 7 minutes, I just wanted to mention, because you're in my hometown, you're in New Orleans, and and Albert Shaka Senkyu Woodfox, you know, was released from prison last Friday after 44 years of consecutive solitary confinement, the longest person held such in this country's history.
And
when he was released, he told me, you know, one of the things he wanted to do was go to his mother's gravesite and his sisters, because they wouldn't let him out of Angola, because they would normally let you know, imprisoned men, you know, go to the funerals, but they wouldn't let him because they were just mean, because he was a freedom fighter, still is for that matter. And so when he you know, ancestors, his mother was on his heart. You know, that's the first thing he went by the cemetery, put some flowers
right on.
So I just thought, you know, that's just so beautiful. And I wanted you to talk a little bit about you know, love for our people and being guided by love, and I don't know if you could mix that, you know, your aesthetic in there, because you know you know, you were a famous dancer and choreographer and all that too, you know, and that is a way that one can also express one's spiritual being, because sometimes we don't have words for it, but our body has memory, and they just, you just let it go and just follow it, and it will take you where you need to be as well.
Well, we're worshipers of beauty. I mean, that is a given. Anybody, any group of people who are close to nature will automatically be worshipers of beauty. You know, one of the good things on the website these days is you can go on and put in the OMO people, O-M-O, the OMO people. They're a group of people in North East Africa who get up every day and dress themselves with things from the forest to look like they blend into the forest. And they're amazing. They're absolutely amazing. They show you, you know, the natural cosmeticals of African people. But of course, their land is now being invaded. You know, their river people, attention has been called to them. And so, you know, somebody's going to try to get them in blue jeans and get them to bleach their skin. But you know, beauty is all around us, and we tend to manifest it as a spiritual, cultural phenomena. So, and somebody like me, and I have to admit that, you know, I'm Venus ruled and a child of Oshun, and I tend to be, indulge my senses, you know, so fabric and music and flowers and flavors and feelings and all of that stuff, I shamelessly pursue
as spiritual practice.
Oh, peace.
To dance for the spirits is one of the most erotic things I've ever done in my life. You know, my years with Catherine Dunham, the energy running through my body, the connection with audience, the luxurious costumes, the being able to reconstruct the stories, that kind of creative work is the joy of my life.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you so much. And looking forward to seeing you when you come to town in a couple of weeks. It's going to be really awesome.
Okay, baby.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. So safe travels and good luck on everything, you know, in settling, you know, your mother's affairs. And,
right.
Yeah. And so are you going to be around here on your birthday, or are you going back home after the festival?
Well, you know, the future, Mao Shun loves certain kinds of intrigue. So as I'm sitting here right now, earlier today, a man came through to take a look at, we're trying to sell my mother's house. Okay, I'll be in the Bay Area March 10th through the 24th.
Okay.
When I leave on the 24th, I'll be coming back here and not sure where I'm going. If the house is up for sale, I will move out and go somewhere. Mm-hmm. If it's not for sale yet, I'll be here until it is for sale. So, you know, I don't know exactly where my birthday in April is going to find me, but it could be Texas, it could be Puerto Rico, it could be Ghana. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, tell everybody to send me good energy to land in the right place at the right time.
All right. Okay, well, you take good care, and again, thank you so much for this wonderful conversation. And I'll make sure
okay.
I let Javelin know. Hopefully she'll be around, and we can, you know, she'll be able to come and see you as well.
Okay, baby.
All right. You take care, yeah.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye.